Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
To the hosts, to the bloggers, thanks to everybody who makes the Head On Radio Network go. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 155 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Stop by CRMW.net and see for yourself what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day, today being Friday, June 20, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time, on Friday, June the 20th, 2008, you're listening to a live show, and you're more than welcome to call in and participate and talk about the topics or whatever is on your mind. I'll be giving out the phone numbers in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and it's there that you'll find links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from the past shows, as well as links to the chat room, which is up and running as I speak, and I keep an eye on the chat room. It's one way to communicate with the show. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com also for the Strictly Confidential MySpace page and links to help you locate music that you hear on the show. You'll also find there a link to the Head On Radio Network main site. Now, at the network main site, you can find out about the other progressive programming that you can hear on the Head On Radio Network, of which I'm a very small part. You'll find PayPal buttons there also to make it easier for you to support the horn and keep the server serving and the packets packing. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. You'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. Again, that's 304-658-3333. But regardless of which way you call, we are glad to hear from you. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do check the email from time to time during the show. So there are three ways. You can use email, peter@headonradionetwork.com, or you can call or you can log into the chat room by going to strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll see a link there for chat, and you just click in and get yourself a username, and then you're good to go. Unlike some of the other networks, we do not charge the chat room. We consider it a very important component, and it wouldn't be fair to charge for it. Let's see, where do we begin on a Friday evening? Friday evening in North Florida, the heat is on, I can tell you that. My stars, it's a warm, warm day. It's kind of a busy day, back and forth into Tallahassee today to take care of various sundry details that keeps one's life rolling along. I'm painfully aware of the cost of gas when it is 20 miles to the nearest grocery store and 20 miles back. You begin to realize how much $4 and some odd cents actually costs in terms of just surviving. When you live in a rural area, certainly mass transit is not an option. It's either drive or starve, or perhaps get a mule. But in any case, it's tough. I read an article today about miles per gallon, and that how misleading that is, and that we should actually be calculating it to make it a more real number for so that we can comprehend it in a better way. And actually, as the scale goes up, the difference is, in any case, it's far more accurate to look at it as gallons per mile. That gives you a quick assessment of actually how much it costs you to drive when you stop looking at miles per gallon and you begin to look at it in a more realistic way of gallons per mile. But it was an interesting observation. I'm actually afraid to run that calculation for fear that I will drive the car even less. It's gotten to the point that one has to combine trips and try to plan ahead. There's no hopping in the car and running down to Tallahassee for frivolous things. Wow, what a week it has been. Last night's guest, Mr. John Hedges, was a delight. I really enjoyed talking to that fellow. He was genuinely interested in the music and a genuinely talented individual who goes back all the way to running a pirate FM station out of his garage in his parents' home with an antenna on the roof that his dad knew nothing about, and from there to owning his own record label. And what a interesting fellow. If you missed that, that's at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. That was last evening. It'll be on the 19th. The calendar dates are separated so that you can see who the guest was and get a link to the White Rose Society audio file. Next week is just as exciting. I'm thrilled to tell you that Jessica Williams will be here this coming Wednesday, the evening of the 25th. Jessica Williams is huge. You will know her from the track called Queen of Fools, one of her big hits, and there were many, many others. And when Glenn, our executive director of talent bookings, told me that he had set up Jessica Williams, my jaw dropped to the floor, and I tried to recover. And as you all know, I get rather nervous when people come on the show whose records I used to play. I couldn't tell you why, but I get all gnarled up. And actually, there are two music guests. We've missed some days due to my work schedule lately, so we have a week coming up that there'll be two music guests, actually. And Thursday evening, we will have Don Harvey, and Don Harvey is an up-and-coming musician, a very different type of musician than either Pamela Stanley or Jessica Williams. He's a singer, songwriter, musician, and you can only, as best I can call it, gay folk. He has a brand new CD called Good Clean Fun, and we're looking forward to listening to some of those tracks and talking with Don Harvey. He is a member of Gay Guitarists Worldwide and is the Pride, a June 2008 special Pride member, as it appears, featured player, as it appears on the Yahoo Pride page, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm looking forward to that, too. So, wow. That might not happen. So I'll keep that one to myself. I'll keep it to myself. We have some music this evening for you. will tell you that Hank Steinhauer from Miami will be the DJ across the street at the Paradox Dance Hall this evening, starting at approximately 10:30. He will be running a special mix that he has done for Strictly Confidential. It's a all-share mix, and it's great fun. It's great. Hank has a way of keeping the energy at max, and so I'm looking forward to running that. Hank was scheduled for last Wednesday, but we ran over. I wasn't able to fit it in. And also want to tell you, we ran a bit of a track last evening, one that was produced by John Hedges. We had some shortened edits. One of the tracks that we ran was called Seclusion by Sean Benson. And I got no less than five, maybe six emails today expressing wow, which is pretty much my reaction, and also asking to hear the track in full. And we'll try to fit in that track in full this evening, and some other tracks too. So where do we begin? Let me grab the stack, the Friday stack. Papers rustling through. Oh, my stars. The news. One day it'll get better. One day it will. Do you remember I told you the story not too long ago about what occurred in Sacramento? In Sacramento, the Slavic people have moved in great numbers into Sacramento, and they are homophobic beyond your wildest dreams. This is being stirred up both in Sacramento and in the Baltics, in that area, by the Watchmen on the Walls. This is a religious group that has a revisionist history of the Holocaust. It was actually the gays, according to them, who started the Holocaust and responsible for the persecution. And in addition to that, we are, of course, doing all the standard gay things of snatching your children and luring your husbands away, or your wives, whichever side of your preference may fall on. But in any case, it's the reaction of the death of his name was Singh, Santander Singh, from the various LGBT groups in Sacramento is that they were surprised it hadn't happened earlier because of the amount of hate speech that goes on in the churches there, the evangelistic churches that speak their native language. There are television stations, radio stations that are just infested with this type of anti-gay rhetoric and is specifically targeted toward the Slavic folks who are living there. In any case, Santander Singh was from Fiji. The court refers to the two groups as the Fijians and the Russians, Russians being the folks, the Slavic, Slavic folks. In any case, you recall I told you the story that Santander had gotten a promotion at the call center. It was an AT&T call center, as a matter of fact. He'd gotten a promotion, and he was celebrating in a park on a weekend afternoon when the weather was warm. He was celebrating with three straight couples, three married straight couples, so there would have been a total of 2, 4, 6, 7, but when you include Alexander, or actually Santander, and so they had the Fijian or type music on. They're from their native land. They were playing music, and Santander was very ecstatic. He was dancing and carrying on, and sometimes he would grab one of the women's husbands and dance with them, and it was all very fun, and it was all very funny. The three couples knew he was gay, and they were all humoring him, and they all loved him. They all liked him, and so it was all great fun and joking back and forth. But this was observed by the group the court refers to as the Russians. The Russians were not at all amused that a homosexual would have the nerve to display in a public park on a weekend when they were out with their families. And first it started with name-calling. The Russians began speaking loudly about the faggot over there and the queers and the faggots. And so as the afternoon went on, the group of people who were celebrating there, Santander and the three married couples, began saying things maybe a bit anti-Russian. Alcohol was involved. People don't make the correct judgments when alcohol is involved. Nonetheless, the speech elevated, which is what tends to happen when alcohol is involved. And so the Russians began throwing bottles, and one of the Russians, in fact, the Russian that has left the country, the FBI is looking for him, who threw the punch, the fatal punch, I might add, threw what the court called the punch of the century at Santander, and Santander was thrown off of his feet, and his head hit the concrete that the picnic table was mounted on, and he died very quickly. And so there are plenty of witnesses around who saw all of this. Nonetheless, a mistrial was declared today, Wednesday, in Sacramento Superior Court. Actually, Wednesday, Wednesdays is all the same to me. Yes, it's Friday, Wednesday. For Wednesday, it's a new day. It was declared Wednesday in Sacramento County Superior Court on hate crime charges. And after more than four days of deliberations, the jury of seven women and five men still could not agree on whether the defendant involved in the confrontation assisted in killing Singh because Singh was gay, because he believed he was gay. That was something that they couldn't seem to comprehend. The jury emerged before noon and told the judge that they were irrevocably deadlocked on the hate crime allegations against Alexander Shevchenko. I think this is the best I can tell you that word. He's 22 years old, by the way. This tends to be the most dangerous group for LGBT folks. It is the 18 to approximately 25-year-olds who tend to be the most violently reactive toward the LGBT community. So the Sacramento man, mind you, the man who threw the punches fled the country, but the man who began the escalating, he was a part of it. In any case, the man was found guilty on two misdemeanor counts, disturbing the peace and simple assault for throwing the bottle. They simply could not conceive that he was doing this because Santander was gay, and simply could not connect the dots that there's a huge anti-gay movement amongst that particular community in Sacramento. So check it out. He can face a maximum sentence of 9 months. Imagine that. 9 months in jail when he returns to court in July. And it remains unclear whether the district attorney office is going to continue to try to press the hate crimes charge. The district deputy attorney who is prosecuting the case said that the charge is still in existence. It is not revolved, and it's not anything we've dropped. It's not anything we've conceded. But Singh's death has emerged as a symbol of the tension between the gays, the local gays, and members of the Slavic evangelical movement that has publicly spread anti-gay rhetoric, both in print form and in media form and in the pulpit. Now, the Russian man's attorney, Shevchenko's attorney, said he's going to appeal the verdict. He is going to appeal the two misdemeanor counts of disturbing the peace and assault for throwing the bottle. He says, I understand the jury was deadlocked because of the hate crime enhancement, because there was no hate crime. And he questioned why the jurors had convicted his client even on misdemeanor counts when his client was simply defending himself from the homosexual. Can't make this stuff up. It was Shevchenko who threw the bottle at the members of Singh's party, the group, the married couples, and
And it was Singh who ran after him and chased him. And so the dispute went on for almost the entire day. This began shortly before noon, and neither group was willing to leave. As I said, alcohol's involved, and that's that whole thing. But in any case, it's it occurred after a day-long dispute, a day-long argument. And Seven Cisco says that the hate crime, it's been exaggerated, and it was all the time it was political. He said it was a big mistake, he said, out of the courtroom, meaning the charges, not the crime. Later in the afternoon, he prayed with his mother to the God that hears hate speech and endorses it. He prayed to that God with his mother at home and took a nap. And he maintained that what had happened in the park was not motivated by hate. I have nothing against gays or anyone, he said innocently. I never caused no hate crime. That's a quote. I had nothing to do with it, despite the fact that the witnesses left and right who would argue otherwise. There were jurors who said the panel quickly agreed to convict him on the two misdemeanor accounts, which was simple assault and what was the other one? It's a misdemeanor. It really just doesn't matter. The jury foreman, actually forewoman, said she had signed the documents stating as such last Friday for the misdemeanor counts. But the panel was completely divided over the hate crime enhancement would have made the disturbing the peace charge a felony and could have brought up to 3 years in prison. 3 years. Only 3 years. In any case, the jury was split. Seven jurors believing that Shevchenko was guilty of the hate crime, and five saying he is not guilty of the hate crime. And they remained in that deadlock throughout late Wednesday morning. There was a juror, she said after the fact, after the they were let out, that she couldn't vote to convict him of a felony hate crime, and she questioned the testimony of the people who witnessed it. She just couldn't believe it, you see. There are many people who just cannot believe the depth of the hate and the rabid rage against the LGBT community because they have never experienced it or seen it from a family member going through it. There are many who simply don't believe it. It's the same sort of people who don't believe in the phenomenon of driving while black, that it must be that those black people are violating and speeding and weaving around about the road much more than they are, which is the reason they get pulled over more. Goes along those same lines. She said, well, slurs were yelled from both sides. Yeah, but only one side physically attacked. She said, I just don't think it was hate. Another juror, another woman too, Aditi Bolin, said she felt strongly that Shevchenko's was guilty of a hate crime. Another juror said, well, it was just the consequences of his being gay, meaning being in the park while gay. I'm sorry. Anyway, the jurors heard 3 weeks of conflicting testimony. And according to Singh's party, the group of seven were drinking playfully and dancing to Indian music, and Singh was the only one who didn't have a partner, and he was seen hugging and dancing with other men, the husbands of the straight women. They were friends, as I said. And there were various picnic people from the other party saying that Singh was dancing sexually and provocatively with another man while there were families and children nearby, of course, to the prejudiced eye, to those who are steeped in American tradition, any sort of dancing between men is, of course, provocative and sexual. What else could it possibly be? So the court said that Shevchenko's friend, who has now fled the country, who the FBI is looking for, through the punch of the century, Singh fell backward, injured his head, died 4 days later. And Savchenko was arrested shortly after his death. The other fellow, Busick, left the country. And again, the FBI are attempting to locate him. Imagine that. So there's great concern in Sacramento about giving the man 3 years. Speaking of 3 years, let's go to Greenville, South Carolina. Stephen Mahler, who's 19 years old, he threw a single punch to Sean Kennedy. Sound familiar? A gay man outside of a gay bar in Greenville, South Carolina. Now, Kennedy was actually standing outside the gay bar with his female friend. They were great buddies and used to do fun stuff together. I think perhaps Stephen was upset that there was a faggot talking to a woe man. That woe man's for us, I assume is the logic. It's hard to grapple with these things. This punch, in the same as Singh's death, threw him off balance. He fell and he hit his head on the concrete. In any case, he was sentenced on June the 11th to 3 years in prison, which would be what the other fellow would have gotten, after pleading guilty to involuntary manslaughter. The grand jury found no malicious intent, so the prosecutor dropped the murder charge. You see, there is no escalation in South Carolina for a gay hate crime. It just doesn't happen there. So it was murder or manslaughter. The prosecutor dropped the murder charge. They say that while there's no evidence that Mahler specifically acted on hatred for gay people, that shortly after the attack, he called the girl that Kennedy was with outside the bar. Apparently he knew her. He called the girl that Kennedy was with outside the bar, the man he killed. Kennedy is dead. He called her and left a voicemail message. Now, the voicemail message was a mix of laughter and profanity and words like faggots and queers and much bravado and bragging about what he had done to that faggot Kennedy. Now, regardless of that telephone call, the murder charge was dropped. And, of course, as I said, there is no hate crimes law there. So the Greenville newspapers reported that Kennedy hit his head after the punch and he suffered fatal brain damage. And even at 3 years, the judge gave him, he could have gotten 5 years, you see, for murdering this man, but it was only involuntary manslaughter, you see, because it wasn't because he was gay or it wasn't premeditated. He just killed somebody and called up later and bragged about it. It was just, you know, those things happen every day. He could have gotten 5 years, the judge gave him 3 because he wanted to rehabilitate him. He ordered him to take anger management classes and drug counseling, and his defense attorney pleaded against prison because, and I quote, there are bad people there and he's going to be exposed to things he's never seen. Well, I submit to you that Sean Kennedy was exposed to things he had never seen either. The evening he was killed, while talking to one of his female friends in front of a gay bar in Greenville, South Carolina. So we have a possible 3 years that's 9 months. We have a possible 5 that's 3 years, and these are for murder. Oh, but what do you get for a blowjob? 6 years for blowing a man. Of course, I have very little sympathy here. I'm not, you know, I don't have favorites, of course. But Glenn Murphy, if you'll recall, we did the story about Glenn Murphy. He's the former chair of the Clark County, Indiana Republican Party, the Young Republicans. Not only was he the chair, he was the big up and coming rising, if I'm not mistaken, the big banana in the Young Republicans, which are basically silver spoon in your mouth Republicans. In any case, Glenn, a closeted homosexual, was in the habit of giving blowjobs to men who were asleep. This didn't play too well to the men who were asleep, and woken by Glenn Murphy gobbling on their body parts. In any case, Glenn Murphy has pleaded guilty to performing oral sex on a sleeping man who is 22. You see, in the story we covered a while back, that they both stayed over at his sister's house following a Young Republican event. And they were somehow ended up at the sister's house. And the man awoke and pushed Clark away. And when he realized what Clark was doing to him, and he left, he later taped a telephone conversation with Murphy, the Young Republican, during which Murphy apologized and begged him not to report it to the police. Well, as the newspaper reported, he took a plea, and under the plea, he's going to go to prison for 6 years, but four are suspended. So he gets 2 years in prison and 4 years of probation for stealth blowjobs. By the way, does this not demonstrate the time-honored tradition of Republican closet cases? He was no doubt would like to have been log closet Republican when he grew up, but then that would mean he would have to come out, which is something that can't take these people. It was, how did this work? It was a special citation. Oh, yeah, BuzzFlash gave them a special award for to a trio of Republican perverts. You gotta love BuzzFlash. And the Glenn Murphy guy was the GOP hypocrite of the week. And it was a number of here is apparently that he's done this to four men over the period of his, I just can't tell anybody I'm gay, so I'm going to blow you while you're asleep mentality. And the other people have come forward to talk about. So I guess that you could say that Glenn Murphy was sucking up to his friends. I didn't come up with that devious line that actually came from BuzzFlash, so I have to give that one to BuzzFlash. But those are my opening stories. I wanted to tell you about the sentencing and young Republicans who give men blowjobs and then other men who are killed in the park just for dancing. Too bad that Murphy didn't give a blowjob to that Russian guy while he was asleep. Maybe that would have been divine justice. I'm sorry, I get bitter as I age. More and more bitter. I think we should probably do a little breaky-poo here. Let me give Bob a clue is what we might do. Ah, here, this looks like a good break. And, I'll give that there. And when we come back from break, we'll be still taking your phone calls. If you'd like to participate, it's 877, the number 4 head on, or 877-443-2366. And if you have unlimited long distance, use 304-658-3333. We'll be right back.
I can't tell you how many radio stations I'm on where the opposition will say, have you read Leviticus 20? And I say, yeah, I've read Leviticus 20. What does it mean to you? And he says, a man who sleeps with another man is an abomination and should be killed. And I say, who should do the killing? You church people. And this Presbyterian in Seattle says, no, that's the civil authority's job. That's why we need to get more good men of God elected in the government. And I said, so they can kill us? He said, well, you must find that hard to take, Dr. White, but God said it first, and it's our job to obey.
And we're back from the bottom of the hour break. This is Strictly Confidential. I guarantee that. And I'm Peter Godbold. That's my story, and I am sticking to it. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366, unlimited long distance. Please use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. Rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And we have my favorite, Preston, on the line. Preston, welcome.
Hi, Peter.
Hi there. What's it like in Denver this evening, my friend?
It's about mid-80s. Couple clouds in the sky, not many. And I guess they're expecting about the same for the Pride Fest starts tomorrow. I feel like I might be calling the wrong number. You were just reading that number, 658-3333.
Actually, right? There are several, and I use 658-33. They all ring into the same place. But I use 3333 because it's easier. But we have, there's so many lines that ring in, it just happens to be my number of choice.
Okay.
Yeah, that's that, either way. Yeah.
I happen to be going with 54 or 53, so.
That's cool. That's a good one. I like that one, too. So sometimes I use that one. You could sort of sneak up on Agnes and Bob when the show's out of the air if you use that one.
And I kind of like spending money on long distance when I can, and when I can help you guys out, but also the phone company that I do my long distance with. It used to be called Working Assets.
Yeah.
And now it's called Credo. They just changed. And I don't know if you're familiar with them at all, but it's one of those companies that will take a portion of their profits and put it into various worthy causes. And over the past, 8 years or so, they've sent like $6 million to a wide array of groups, media groups, gay rights groups, Physicians Without Borders, Amnesty International, Greenpeace, Code Pink, all Global Exchange. And,
I'll be darned. And that's called Credo. You know, it seems like quite a while ago, at least a year or two ago, I got something in the mail, something at random, from a company that purported to do that, and I never followed up on it. But I wonder if it seems that the title Working Assets is familiar, and so Working Assets became Credo, did they?
Yeah, Working Assets, I think, is one of the pioneers in this kind of phone bill activism, you might call it, and it's one of the largest, and and others have, kind of spun off of that idea and are also doing good work. Working Assets is kind of on my mind. Well, my sister is part of it. They also, they send out, with their phone bills, some kind of, information on legislation or some issue in the world and numbers, not just of politicians, but, of corporate CEOs to call or to email or whatever. They'd even pay if you were making a long distance call to some of these CEOs that they suggested you call who were polluting the world or whatever. They would pay for that phone call.
Just and, total wow. That's a lot for a company to do.
They had nice quotes with a lot of their bills. They always had a quote. Actually, I cut one out here. From Mohammed, that's certainly subversive to dare quote Mohammed in this day and age, but quote of the month in this bill, it says, the ink of the scholar is more sacred than the blood of the martyr.
Wow. That goes against what the standard rhetoric is, isn't it? Yeah. You're supposed to be a martyr, according to the radicals, but Muhammad had something different to say about it. He did.
That's right, and they try to frame him very differently. And the people doing the framing are the ones most guilty of what they accuse others of. I mean, they're militant, odd version of Christianity. They're very much into blood sacrifice, especially defenseless people, pretty much. that
yeah, there seems to be a huge taste for war. Oh, by the way, Preston, I was looking through before the show started. It was earlier this afternoon. I was looking through movies just online. I've never seen it, but I came across a movie that the title fascinated me. It was called G.I. Jesus. you gotta love the title. I didn't have time to read the information about it, but that's what I'm going to investigate. Anything that's called G.I. Jesus has got to be a great skewer there.
That's so true. And, you know, I wonder if it's for him, along the lines of this trend that I saw in, you know, just all the proselytizing and this, you know, particular version of missionary Christianity in our armed forces. They'd set up these, like, temporary pools, you know, bigger than a kiddie pool, but they had a lot of these pools in among the forward operating bases of our troops, some of our troops in Iraq, where they'd baptize people and convert them. And
I knew you were going there. I knew that's what you were doing. Yeah.
Combined with all this, you know, left behind sort of vision of, you know, religiosity. And, I'll definitely be looking for that on Amazon here. In fact, I'm on Amazon the past few minutes, and every once in a while I'll get on particular threads of stuff, some new thing that I'll, you know, new sort of book that just opens kind of a new window on the world for me. And I'm finding right now this incredible, you know, it goes by different names, but like, Graphic Agitation is the title of one of the books, and it's about, like, people using graphic design and graffiti or graphic art, stencils and stuff, to communicate, you know, and usually progressive, you know, ideas or critical of authority type ideas. And finding some remarkable work, and it's a worldwide movement also. And graffiti, I mean, that, talk about an ancient form of dissent. They were doing that on the walls of the Roman Empire.
And for real? Preston, I had no idea. One always pictures the Roman Empire as spick and span, maybe hot and dry, but always spick and span. I'm just amazed.
Well, they certainly were aiming for that. And lots of armed guards running around trying to keep it that way. And but still, people persist. And, in fact, a work of graffiti, real interesting one that I found here in Denver a couple of years ago. You know, I don't remember exactly all the imagery, but a lot of different things coming at you, very beautifully scary in some sections and then inspiring in others. And in the corner it said something like the artist had written something like, "Claiming my rights here in Roman times."
Wow.
Yeah.
There was some struggle going on then. It wasn't all, it was, well, you know, you just about what you think about it, really, the lavish lifestyles and Pilvia grape and the whole opulence. It's surely there had to be a very angry underclass, come to think of it.
Yeah, yeah. And the hope, you know, the impossible thing, you know, of how does this stop? Do we stop? How ugly is it going to be if it collapses? You know, there's a lot of anxiety and concern about that, but you know, my feeling is that our military empire can transform, just like Roman Empire eventually did, and turn into something like Italy, modern Italy, which is rather pleasant place to be. People love being there and hanging out in their cafes and, you know, having a less aggressive foreign policy in the world. And it's a shame that, you know, I mean, life doesn't end with these collapses of these structures. And in fact, it can become much more pleasant. It's a shame they've had a political leader like Berlusconi over the past, you know, few years, but still there's a vibrant labor movement and all sorts of things. The slow food movement. I mean, they've got their slow food traditions and they're hanging on to them. And I actually was listening to another talk show, I think Mike Malloy, and he had a caller who mentioned that she was going to be off to Genoa, Italy, to enjoy.
Yes. Well, you know, that, what is it, the fellow's name, the politician you just quoted in Italy, doesn't he own a lot of the media? Didn't he just openly buy up the TV stations and the newspaper?
Yep. You know, he's got that big, you know, that big part of the bought business media that, I don't know, people, you know, people are retaining their traditions of, you know, conversation over meals and mochas, or what do they drink there, cappuccinos and all that kind of stuff. So they have their own communication networks, you know, and Berlusconi can do his, you know, circus stuff, but I don't know. Italy, actually, you know, the Vatican's there, and they're always talking about they're not big on birth control oftentimes and things like that, but nevertheless, Italian women, I think, have, like, one of the lowest birth rates in the world because...
good for them.
Yeah.
That tells me that they're in control of their own bodies. That's always a good thing.
There's that, and they're very well educated. They've got all sorts of degrees. They've got a huge ratio of PhDs in the country, and yeah, they've got control over the bodies and some economic and professional autonomy, and so it's. And in some ways, I think to keep there is some population growth going on in Italy, and it's primarily due to immigrants who have been coming in. And, you know, for some people, that's a problem. For me, I think it's great. And, you know, so be it.
And, well, I'm wondering about the medical situation there. You know, in the movie Sicko, we talked about England, or he did, and about France, but I don't believe Italy was ever mentioned. Do you know what the medical situation is there?
That's a great question. A great question. We so often think of, you know, those two countries or Canada. My guess is that, you know, I haven't heard negative stuff about it. You know, like they've got millions of unemployed and people going bankrupt and all that kind of stuff over healthcare. So I imagine it's probably some sort of, you know, it could be a mix of private and public, but universal health care is my guess.
Well, if they're part of the European Union, they're no doubt at least headed in that direction.
Yep, that's right. We had a guy, a local video journalist from Denver, a guy named T.R. Reed. He did a program recently for, I think, something like Frontline or some other sort of public television program like that, and it was called and I don't remember the name of it, but essentially what he did was travel to a lot of countries around the world and spoke to healthcare professionals. He went to England, he went to France, he went to Japan, he went to Taiwan. Taiwan was really interesting because they're like 15 years ago they had a system like ours, and a lot of people weren't being insured. They totally changed it. They studied countries around the world and kind of picked the best functioning parts of various countries. And they've got the most incredible system going on now. And the rate of satisfaction among the people is just sky high. And it was a fascinating documentary. I'll find the name of it at some point, get back to you with it, but.
Yeah. By the way, Lottie in our chat room has pointed out that Italy has basically the same health care situation as France, so it's actually very good news.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. What else? I heard you mentioning Sacramento and the...
Oh, yes. The ongoing Sacramento thing. It's just amazing. It's like the whole city's been hijacked. The LGBT organizations there are horrified. We had a guest on about the... Oh, I'm sorry, I wish I could remember his name off the top of my head, but he's involved in an organization that documents and does news briefs and a newsletter about what's going on with the the Russian immigrants who are so rapidly anti-gay. And he was a great guest. I'm embarrassed that I can't remember his name. It wasn't that long ago. But when you're in your mid-50s, you could get away with forgetting just about anything. So,
well, I like to get away with it now in my early 40s because I do it all the time myself. I know just what you mean. Yeah, Sacramento, it's, you know, it was kind of like the ground zero for Rush Limbaugh. That's where that was his first big gig. And,
I had no idea. He started out on a local radio, or was it television? No, it was radio, wasn't it?
Yep. And I forget the call letters. It's still there. It's one of the few. I think there are only like 8 or a dozen or so 50,000-watt stations, and that was one of them. And,
wow.
Yeah, so it's booming out there to a lot of people, and the new person in that slot, I tuned in like 4 years ago. It was terrible and so manipulative and hardly took any calls when he did. It was just someone could blurt out a sentence repeating what the guy had just said, and you're gone. Terrible. Interestingly, Enid Goldstein, who I adore, a progressive talk radio host who was here in Denver for about a year and a half until this new station that, you know, tried, ran out of money, basically. So she was out of a job, but I discovered her about 2 years later on this progressive Sacramento station. And she is so masterful at dealing with ditto heads. I mean,
Wow, you got to admire that. Where is she again? I'm sorry, I missed.
Well, she... Where is she?
Yes, where did you say this? She does her show?
She used to be in Denver. Before Denver, she was in Dallas. She's been doing it for a while. Most recently, she was in Sacramento on what was an Air America-related station. But about a year ago, they flipped to all sports, ESPN radio. So where she is now, I don't know. And I sure miss her, though, too.
I'm curious, when she's talking to the ditto heads, is she confrontational, or is she softer, and does she confront them in that way, or is it just real stark? I'm wondering how you do that. These people are so dense.
Yeah, it's a mix. And every once in a while, she would be kind of more combative and almost being like, that's sort of ridiculous, don't you think? And or pointing out a hypocrisy or pointing out a contradiction. Sometimes she takes so many calls. You know, these ditto heads, they're learning from incredibly skilled PR agents and corporate lawyers and people skilled in rhetoric. And they go to fancy schools to learn how to deceive the general public, basically. And, they're in think tanks doing role-playing all the time. And so she'd open herself up to all kinds of things. And sometimes she didn't know how to respond. And even there, she'd be careful not to, get too defensive and just be like, well, I'll think about that, or maybe someone in our audience, maybe you might have a good point there, and I'll have to think about it. So she'd be generous at times like that. So she'd give them points, but at the same time, she'd really battle the hypocrisies and the cruelty and the viciousness and conformity and on and on. And graciously, sometimes she'd say, if she had hung up or it got a little bit heated, she'd be like, I don't always agree. Of course, I don't agree with much of anything the Republicans have to say, and we might cuff each other around the ears every now and again, but you can call here. So she is consistently respectful, and she definitely turned some hearts and minds around. She was good. I thought Air America, I know they were thinking about hiring her for a national show at one point because they had her, sit in one day on one of the shows. This is when they, kind of towards their beginning. And, it was like a 15-minute thing, and then she was gone. And I don't know where she is now, but Nope, she's doing good work. She actually went to Italy one time and talked about her experience there and the kind of leisurely pace of life that she noticed there. And everybody wasn't in the, you know, just frantically racing around in the rat race. And Bob and I were talking about the rat race earlier in his show. And things were at a different pace there, she noticed, and she'd report back from these societies. And, you know, she'd mix it up from political stuff to cultural stuff, and very gay friendly. She'd make I remember her making this one joke about the rear admirals or something.
I'll point out that one of our chatters, Fancy Free, has pointed out that Rush Limbaugh's first job was at a radio station that was owned by his father, that explains a lot. You alluded to the training and the things that go into the psychops, you could almost call it, from the right-wing talkers. And there's something I've been observing, and it's become very clear to me over the last few days when listening to audio clips from Michael Savage and how he deals with his callers, and Limbaugh is also guilty of it, and the others too. It seems that because it is so consistent, I can only assume that it is intentional. Now, obviously, with our network, the way the streaming works here, and sometimes we step on each other because there's a slight delay in the window, but they're not experiencing things like that with these multi-billion dollar networks. Everything is you know, in real time, absolutely. So they're here's where I'm headed. It's as if there is this intentional pause, and they wait for the caller to begin speaking again, and about three or four words in, the caller can get like three or four words in, and then they interrupt and jump on them with a topic shift or any number. And so it is quite clear to me that it is intentionally done to keep the caller off balance. Obviously, communication cannot occur under those circumstances. I don't know why people keep falling for it. I'm appalled.
Yeah. It's very much like an interrogation. And it's constant topic shifts and misdirections and straw men they throw out and false dichotomies and either-or scenarios they throw out there. It's very manipulative, and
it reminds me of the old Simon and Garfunkel lyric of people talking without listening, and yeah, that was very prophetic. They must have had right-wing radio in mind back in the day when they sang that song.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Or was it people hearing without listening? I'm not sure, but it was the old Simon and Sounds of Silence track.
Definitely. It concerns me that some people model this. They hear this for enough years, and they start to model this sort of aggressive communication in their own household and stuff. There's this guy who's written about modes of communication, Marshall Rosenberg. He's this internationally known guy, studies communication, language and stuff, and he wrote a book called Nonviolent Communication, and it's about listening and respect and mutual, you know, just being open to other ideas and so forth. And this is, you know, what you hear on talk radio is utterly the opposite. And and there's another book that I think addresses, you know, beyond the politics of what goes on in right-wing radio and beyond the methods of it, the methods of rhetoric and stuff, perception management. There's an attitude training going on, attitude, a compassionless attitude. You know, mock others constantly, mock, you know, dismissive stuff, dismiss all the feminists and feminazis, you know, mock people, make fun of gays. Rush Limbaugh has been doing this for decades. Whenever he, like, he's trying to evoke a gay person, he'll start this lisping talk.
Oh, I didn't realize that anyone did that anymore. I'm a little bit horrified, but it certainly adds up to an even number. I can believe it.
That's right. And, you know, so he's been normalizing all this antisocial stuff. And, emotional intelligence. That's another field, that people are looking at and what's lacking in so much of the national political conversation. And Limbaugh actually started his earliest beginnings. His dad was a political operative for the Republican Party in Missouri. He's from Cape Girardeau, and he worked with the Kansas City Royals for a while doing public relations or, you know, marketing kind of stuff for the Royals. He's a close friend of George Brett, who was an all-star baseball player. And then, I'm sure his dad got his first gigs. He was doing Top 40 radio for a while, but the Sacramento stuff was like his initial show in his current, act.
Yeah, well, Preston, you alluded to people who are constantly exposed to that. I think perhaps you called it aggressive communication, or I forget the exact term. But people who are constantly exposed to it perhaps carry that over into their family relationships and within the dynamic of a family. And it seems to me that if anything is a threat to marriage, it would be adopting that style of communication within the family. If anyone is breaking people up and causing that sort of havoc, it would have to be the people who continue to do that and the people who listen to it.
You know, I saw it go on in my own family, and the disruption it caused. It was, you know, that's why I'm kind of passionate about this, because it's not something out there in the world. It's very close to me. And a member of my family got hooked into that stuff. And my sister and I started receiving letters of these Limbaugh-esque rants attacking basically thing that we valued, environmentalism, public school teachers, and unions. My sister and I are in unions. My sister's a public school teacher. We'd be getting these letters and be like, who is this person? It was like an infiltrator came into our family to disrupt it. And it just goes on like this. And,
wow. What you're saying here is, and I can so easily see it happening. I often talk about the IRD infiltrating churches to cause divisions, but this almost sounds like another institute we don't know about to attempt to divide the family, too. What the hell is going on?
Yeah. And so many of us, and all of us, you know, beyond Rush Limbaugh's particular niche in the war, so many times just how we're raised, where we're not raised to discuss differences in ways where there can be some reconciliation made. And we're taught ways of communicating that kind of entrench our positions and get us talking past each other. And, you know, so many times calling into talk radio, they're goading people into arguments. And again, I think we picked that up. And, you know, this family member and I, at first we were talking around the problem. You know, it was, you know, comments here and there with a lot of, let's talk about the weather for a while instead. There's an issue here. And sometimes these issues would erupt into some knockdown drag outs. And it hurt, you know, even if, you know, it's just a hurtful experience in many ways. An earlier caller was talking about the parable of the trapeze artist and how difficult it can be for somebody to let go of that bar that they've been holding on to and that provided them some sense of community or, you know.
Yes, 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 I do.
Whatever. And to try to get people to let go of that bar, it can be difficult. And they've got to do it themselves, ultimately. And how do you encourage that without, you know, versus making them defensive or making them feel stupid or whatever? You know, I think a large mm-hmm. part of it also is knowing that we ourselves, progressives, everybody, we all get trapped, you know, from time to time. And so, you know, Rush Limbaugh's stuff, that's just one particular version of it. A particularly venal version of it, but I don't know.
Well, you mentioned in speaking here, I think you touched on methods of communication. I was reading quite recently how our rapid communication, quickly firing back an email. Of course, there's IM, and then of course there's chat. People, you know, there is value in remaining silent for a while and thought. And this takes time. Nobody thinks lightning fast. I know I do. Maybe I did when I was younger, but I made bad decisions then. Now that I'm older, I think much slower. Yeah, I hope I make better decisions. But this thoughtless communication process doesn't facilitate things getting any better.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the medium also demands this rapid-fire ping-pong sort of you know, pace of communication, which is very difficult, and that's another thing that's, you know, makes people hesitant to call in, you know, and and back to the ways in which we're sometimes pitted against each other in our bullying, in our communication, you see this so often in the cyberbullying. You know, how common is it over websites and blogs for disagreements to turn into flame wars, right? I mean, this happens over and over. And even in some websites that aren't political, really. I was talking to some of my nieces and nephews about, you know, do you get on message boards and, you know, that kind of thing. What message boards do you take part in? And one of them was telling me about some hobby and something. And he's like, yeah, I used to do that, but people are so mean. And he stopped doing it. So again, these tools that we have at our fingertips, literally, that could be used for, you know, community and information, they're getting disrupted. And I think a lot of it's intentional. I think they're, you know, these people in these think tanks, you know, I think they're busy pitter-pattering away on these message boards. And they're doing it, you know, because they've picked it up or whatever, but...
And to the destruction of the country and to the destruction of the individual, what is the goal, Preston? Do you have a clue? I don't. I don't know why I can't in my fathom why anyone would want to push society in that direction. Do you have a clue?
I have a few clues to some of it. Like, some of our founding fathers actually... James Madison, for instance, you know, people put them up on a pedestal all the time, and democracy and freedom and all this, and they're ahead of their times. You know, in some ways, some of them were, but in other ways, they were Machiavellian politicians who owned land and slaves, and they didn't have a problem with wiping out the native population. And their goal was, James Madison said something like, the purpose of government is to protect the opulence of the elite from the majority. It's an elite worldview, a worldview of the plutocracy, which is always trying to rationalize their greed. And they admire power over people instead of mutual aid. It was like that Rod Parsley screaming the other day. You know, they love being warriors, and we get off on warfare. It's how weak people feel power. And not just physical power over, but if you can control people's minds, they love that.
Which is perhaps even, well, at least as abusive as physical confrontation. It seems to me to be a predatory spirit, one that I can't endorse, and I can't, in my heart, I just have never felt that way, and so I can't understand it. It's almost like straight people cannot understand how anybody can be gay. It's like I don't get how anybody could be predatory in that way. I'm a simple person.
Yeah. They have, like, some of their thinkers, some of their philosophers, they have anthropologists. There's this one guy named, like, Stephen LeBlanc, and I wonder if that's his real name or his pen name. He thought he was being cute, you know. I think the white is what he's saying. So, but anyway, he does, like, a sort of anthropology, and he focuses on a war, and they'll say this is the human condition, and we'd be silly not to try to be the top dog, basically. And again, it's the same sort of stuff that the Nazis used to justify what they're doing. You know, if they didn't do it to the Jews would be doing it to us, and that kind of thing. An abusive parent does. You know, the father has his reasons why he's beating the child or raping the wife. You know, they've got this thing in their head as to why they deserved it. Because I guess part of it, why they're doing this, is that they've got such an view. Victor Davis Hanson, I saw him on C-SPAN last weekend, and this guy, he's one of their favorite thinkers on the right wing, and he said, humanity is a repulsive species. That's their view.
Only form of spirituality that I know from my background would be Christianity, and it so goes at such a core level against the ultimate tenet of that, which is to deny your animal nature and that we've all fallen short, and that we should you know, less of ourselves and more of others in our thinking. It's so many of these people purport to be Christians, yet they violate a very basic tenet of love of your fellow man. I'm lost.
And how they see, you know, what is the animal nature to them? It's a pack of wild dogs, but they're blinded to the part of our animal nature that could be, you know, a cow, you know. Pretty gentle creature, chewing grass.
Yes. Yeah, cows are cool. They never hurt anybody, plus their little cow hearts. Yeah.
You know, Rush Limbaugh is constantly bringing up examples from the animal world where animals are
really
cool to each other. Yeah. He'll talk about dolphins. Oh, people think they're so cute and loving and friendly and smart. Those dolphins will kill their own young. And at times they probably will. He has a political point in pointing that out over and over again. He's talking about the animal and man. There's actually a hip-hop song that addresses exactly this issue, how the right sees these stories and sees our nature and, you know, and how we should operate in the world through how they define our nature versus how I think people just normally define their nature. Certainly, you know, we're full creatures and all that, but generally speaking, you know, when we hold our babies or the babies of friends, we don't look down on them and say, God, you're a repulsive species, child. You know, I mean, that's hatred, ultimately. You know, what do Victor Davis Hanson's kids think when their dad's up there saying humans are repulsive? Or does Victor say, except for my family, they're cool, and my rich friends that I serve, they're cool.
That's a very good point. I really love and appreciate the way you think. You are able to connect the dots in ways that I can't normally do that.
I'm finding a new kind of anthropologist. There are other kinds of anthropologists that don't get the same attention in the media, but from older ones like Ruth Benedict, there's a stamp for her, and she had a very different view of our nature and stuff like that. And she could also describe situations in which human nature can produce terrible results, and it has to do with social structures and whether they're authoritarian or not. That was a big indicator as to how cruel that would be. And the more authoritarian it was, the worse the outcomes. But in situations where people aren't under duress, life is a beautiful thing. But there's this other anthropologist I found, Douglas Fry, and he wrote a book called The Human Potential for Peace, an Anthropological Challenge to Assumptions About War and Violence. This is radical stuff, subversive stuff.
Our favorite.
Yep, yep. Subvert this militant paradigm.
Wow.
So what else? I was wondering if you've, in your travels, or maybe in Florida or some other towns you visited, if you found any of the network of gay bookstores.
In Tallahassee, actually, Lord, this was way back in the 60s, there was a bookstore called Ruby Fruit Jungle, and it was owned by, there were some lesbians owned it, and it was a great bookstore. It had, titles like Gay American History and all the, the manifestos and books, and you pick up a magazine or whatever, and it, to be honest, though, that's the only one I mean, other than reading about them. I lived in Portland, Oregon, which you may know. I've lived there a number of years when I was DJing, and I honestly, they were there, but I just never came across one. There was a great bookstore in Portland called Powell's Bookstore. In fact, they're a great online bookstore now. Powell, I think I've seen Powell's bookstore listed on Ben Burch's site. Great store. If you ever have a chance to physically go to it, you can wander in there for hours and get completely lost in the aisles. But, Ruby Fruit would be the one that would come to mind in Tallahassee when I was just a little radical.
Great. And I've heard of Powell's. I actually have bought from Powell's through the Amazon website because, like, whatever product Amazon, they'll be selling it themselves. And then there'll be these resellers, people who may have a used copy or whatever. And then sometimes other bookstores are with those other resellers. They've got a big pile of books or something that they're pushing along at a discount sometimes. And things from them. And
Powell's, the selection was amazing. It was every novel, every history book, every science book. But you could also go in there. They traded in used books too. So because Portland was, Intel was there, Tektronix was there, Floating Point Systems, they called it Silicon Forest. There was a huge number of really technical computer geek books, about how to lay out the die and an integrated circuit and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I loved going there. Powell's just rules. And it was important. I was so pleased to see so many years later they became an online presence because it was a great store.
We've got a good independent bookstore here in Denver called The Tattered Cover. It's really good. They've actually got three. They're doing well. A lot of independent bookstores, we're kind of overwhelmed by market forces. And but The Tattered Cover is still going. And we do have a couple of gay-friendly smaller bookstores here in Denver, something called The Book Garden. And then in Boulder, another one called Word Is Out Bookstore. And I think they've been such important, community centers for people. Talking about a different way to try to make sense of the world instead of turning on this right-wing noise machine, to be able to...
Yeah, I was just thinking of Rush Limbaugh or Savage, they would fall on the dagger and kill themselves before they would mention the name of a business like Powell's or Amazon without being paid for it. we do this often we talk, you know, we're just exchanging information and don't expect to be paid for it. But it's a whole different philosophy, isn't it?
Yeah. Oftentimes when they do talk about a book, like they'll have an author like, you know, Laura Ingraham. She's talking about her latest book. She wrote one called Shut Up and Sing. And that was ridiculing the Dixie Chicks and other public people who dare to say something political that she doesn't like. And again, it's right back to that aggressive language. The title of her book, Shut Up and Sing. And anyway, she'll be on some talk show, you know, some 50,000 watt show and a bunch of others all across the country. And then she'll be on the TV, on the Fox News and all this stuff. Then on Glenn Beck, you know, whatever. And instead of saying, you know, go to your local independent bookstore to get the trash, they'll say, go to Laura Ingraham's website and you'll get a discount on this stuff, this pseudo-Christian, pseudo-patriot.
Paperback stuff. Christian, the paperback patriot. Yeah, yeah, disposable.
Yeah, yeah. She Laura Ingraham, she's got her own TV show now, something like This Just In with Laura Ingraham. Huh. She interviewed one of the Code Pink ladies two weeks ago. She was terrible. It was embarrassing. I mean, talk about it. It was total aggression and ridicule and all that stuff. It's again, why are they doing this? They're projecting a hatred that they ultimately feel about themselves. There's a superiority complex, you know. The Nazis were into that too. We're superior, and you know, the elite. Socrates said something about the richest and how frightened they are and how vicious they are to protect their treasures, and he said something like, the rich have become so antisocial that they'd rather throw their treasure into the sea than to share it with anybody else.
Well said. And demonstrably true. And I think we're all fortunate. We have gifts, Preston. We are all gifted people, those who participate in this network in any way, because we're people who are at least trying and are not selling out to the popular culture of anger and conquering. And that's not easy to do when you're surrounded by it every day. It tends to edge in my life and other people's lives too. I know it's every day you have to sweep it out. It's like dirt that comes in through the window, through cracks in the window, you know.
Well put. It's an everyday practice, you know. And, you know, people, interestingly, sometimes when I run into people who, you know, they'll say something like, you know, I don't have time for politics, and I should be doing something, or I don't know what to do, and how do you battle all this, and it's all so big, and, you know, what are the ramifications, and whatever. And a while back, I remember asking this one person in particular, I said to her, well, what do you do? You know, what's your typical day like? And she was like, well, going to school, I'm studying the nursing, and I'm babysitting, I'm doing child care for a friend of mine, and on the weekends, I teach an art class at some community center. And I said to her, you know, you don't need to become an activist. You already are an activist. You know, one of the most important kinds, you know, hands-on, you know, teaching art, learning nursing, doing child care. You know, this is the absolutely crucial work. So if you can throw in a few moments of, you know, writing a letter to an editor or buying a progressive book, then that's just icing on the cake.
Yeah, I completely agree, Preston. Preston, I'm delighted that you called. We have the most wonderful conversations, and you so appreciate it. I'm going to need to roll along. We had our DJ across the street that was scheduled for Wednesday night, we bumped him and moved him to tonight, so I want to, because he's, I normally send out this email announcement every day to the DJs. They always, you know, they're always disappointed if we bump their, yeah. So I get that. So I'm going to move along. But Preston, you amaze me, my friend. You definitely are the Gandhi of the Health Radio Network. You gotta love that.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing, and thank you for having this this open space.
Well, there's a lot of open space, and it's my pleasure. This is so rewarding to me in so many ways. I never expected this sort of a blessing after so many years with drugs and alcohol and the whole bit, you know, and when you come out on the other side, you don't know what to expect, but this is just so much better, and you are appreciated. Thank you, Preston.
Great. We'll talk again soon.
I hope so.
Okay.
And good evening to you.
And good night.
And that, folks, is our friend Preston from Denver, one of the most amazing callers. You can, Preston, not only is his line of thought beautiful, he has a soothing voice, too. Bob, let's hire this guy. I think we need to hire Preston. I'm sure we have a slot somewhere. Hire Preston. You can pay him twice as much as you pay me. But in any case, we're going to move along to the gay bar across the street now. It's, as I said earlier, our gay bar across the street segment is by Mr. Hank Steinhauer down in Miami, and if you'd like to find out more about Hank, you can find out about him at hankdisco.multiply.com. That's hankdisco.multiply.com. And he's been a guest on the show and has been playing for many, many years. He has a share mixed set for us. The share, the woman who sleeps on the dirt from her homeland and will live forever. Share. So as we gather up our umbrellas and our raincoats and our pocketbooks and our purses and our tiaras, we'll head across the street to the Paradise Dance Hall.
Across the alley was the Paradise Dance Hall. Evenings in spring, they'd open all the doors and windows and the music would come outside. Sometimes they'd turn out all the lights except for a large glass sphere that hung from the ceiling. It would turn slowly about and filter the dusk with delicate rainbow colors.
I don't know why there's a thing that says I'm like an avid and cut deep inside. Well, I like heaven, they move sometimes. I need a rhythm in Japan. I need a rhythm in Japan. I don't wanna speak, so I know I'm making cry.
Howard down in Miami. I'll tell you, those Miami boys are dangerous. Nobody kicks out a high-energy set like Hank. To find out more about Hank, stop by his website. That is hankdisco.multiply.com. Again, that's hankdisco.multiply.com. And quite a character he is. I want to remind you that tomorrow evening, the Rick Smith Show starts around 5:30 Saturday tomorrow. And then we have Rick's Place with Rick Goodner. That begins at 7 p.m. These are Eastern times tomorrow, Saturday. And then Billy Shears wraps up the night with Night Sounds, one of the most eclectic music shows you will ever hear. And that is tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern. And the programming is not over for the weekend. As the other networks go into rerun, we continue with evening programming. Join us in the chat room. You can find the link there at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com site. And in closing, I would like to thank the chat moderators and the news ninjas who are in constant pursuit of the truth. And here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too.